With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hello and welcome to this week's episode of the Curzon Podcast. We will be discussing Whit Stillman's Jane Austen adaptation, Love and Friendship. I'm Sam Howlett, and as always I'm joined by Jenna.
Hiya.
And the triumphant return of Helen Seymour. Hi Helen.
Hello.
How have you been?
Been alright, I've had a cold.
But you're better now.
I'm better. There's
excellent.
A husk. There's a husk in the room, but
excellent.
It's okay.
Oh, love a good husk in the room.
Yeah.
So, Love and Friendship is based on the novella by Jane Austen titled Lady Susan, and it stars Kate Beckinsale as a prickly, manipulative widow intent on finding her daughter and herself a husband. This week we also have a very exciting interview with director Whit Stillman, which we'll play at the end of the show. So, we're going to be discussing Love and Friendship, which is based on the novella. I don't think it's a full novel.
Yeah, it's a novella that she wrote pre-Pride and Prejudice.
Yeah, and I believe it was never published in her lifetime.
Mm-hmm.
The book's actually called Lady Susan, and it's one of those... Is the word epistolary, where it's all
letters?
Told... Yeah, through like letters and diary
entries. That's interesting.
I think it's epistolary. There's a T in it.
Epistolary, maybe.
Yeah.
Something like that. But yeah, there's... The whole thing is letters between the characters.
Oh, fun.
So in the film, you got Kate Beckinsale as the prickly, manipulative widow, Lady Susan Vernon, who is intent on finding her daughter and herself a husband, just to bump up their social status and their financial security.
Classic Austen.
Yeah. It sounds very typically Austen.
Mm-hmm.
So my question to you is, both of you, can Jane Austen be cinematic? Is there anything particularly cinematic about Jane Austen's books and the films that they're adapted into?
I haven't actually read Jane Austen.
Okay.
But you've never read an Austen? I don't mean to out you.
Had a cold.
Only for a few days. Not your whole life.
Yeah, exactly. Have you read Austen?
Yeah.
Good.
Oh.
Sorry.
No, I don't really like Jane Austen. Well, how can I say? I just... That, that world doesn't appeal to me at all. And any period drama, mm-hmm. I do not like.
Okay. I kind of agree. Because, well, I've read... The
Philistines.
Two, I know, yeah. The two I've read are Pride and Prejudice, obviously, because mm-hmm. it's the one everyone's read, apart from Helen. And Mansfield Park.
Yeah.
And, well, the films that I've seen as well, I've seen... Pride and Prejudice and Sense and Sensibility,
mm-hmm.
and they're both directed by really great sort of visual filmmakers like Joe Wright and Ang Lee.
Mm-hmm.
Ang Lee, who did Life of Pi and Brokeback Mountain, so he's got real...
He did Sense and Sensibility.
Yeah, they've both got real style, but I just find both those films very kind of safe and just kind of... In terms of like an adaptation, they're just the filmed version of the book.
I think this is very different in its adaptation to those films. Those films are very classic. They follow the plot and they do it justice. And I mean, and if you are a fan of Austen,
absolutely,
which I would say I am,
I think a lot
absolutely
of people
love
are.
Them.
Yeah.
Great Sunday afternoon TV with a cup of tea, most definitely. But yeah, I know. I thought this was really a really interesting take on Jane Austen, with all the little devices and gimmicks you use that you don't get in the kind of traditional adaptations.
Yeah, I think Whit Stillman has found a viciousness
mm-hmm.
and a kind of an edge in this very far lesser known Austen book.
Yeah, well, she's really quite the character. Yeah. She's not Elizabeth Bennet. All Jane Austen's usual characters are very likable women. You're just like, you know, Elizabeth is a bit of a feminist for her time.
Well, yeah.
For the time.
Yeah, okay.
Whereas I think apparently it was a really like a cruel character that Jane Austen had written here for this woman. And she showed quite a lot of contempt for her in the writing of this, I think. Whereas I think Stillman, it doesn't really show that. She's quite likeable, I think.
I absolutely agree with you there. Helen, you're not an Austen fan.
And I loved this.
Excellent.
So much.
Cool. Good.
It's so funny.
That's the important thing. Like, I think it's an out-and-out comedy.
Yeah.
It's hilarious.
And comedies are so hard in film.
Yeah.
There's so few comedy films that actually make me laugh.
Yeah, and this one, I think, absolutely nails it.
And I really did laugh in this one.
Yeah,
there's so many moments that are just outrageous. Yeah. Especially because of the time period where everything's a euphemism or a double entendre. It's hilarious, absolutely hilarious.
So, the book's called Lady Susan, and she is our... I was going to say hero then, but she's really not. She's an absolutely, truly memorable character.
Mm-hmm.
An anti-heroine, if you will. Which is actually quite rare. Not just... in a Jane Austen style, that kind of era of book where you'd have an anti-heroine as the lead. But even in films, like, it's quite rare to have the female lead be this mean.
Yeah.
And this much of almost a villain at times. So that's nice to see.
Yeah, especially because she's a likeable villain too, which I don't think you get with female characters very often. They're either kind of evil or really good.
Yeah.
Yeah, I loved watching her. I wanted more. Like, I was so happy when she was on screen. And just her line, and she acted it so well. And I must have been so much fun to film.
Yeah, I think she had an absolute ball making this film, yeah.
Yeah.
I've made a list of my favourite lines.
Oh, great.
I will say that a lot of these are in the trailer.
Really sarcastic.
No, I really do want to hear them.
Sorry, you've got to sit through this.
Sorry.
Oh, great.
Sorry, Sam, I'm interested.
If she were going to be jealous, she should not have married such a charming man. When she's talking about her friend's husband, played by Stephen Fry, she says, he's too old to be governable and too young to die. But I think, also there's a scene where she walks into this person's house and the family's just standing there. She just goes, what a delightful family pose.
Everything she says.
It's such a mean thing to say.
Yeah, it's so cutting and like straight to the quick.
My favourite moment, I think one of my favourite moments in the film is when she's walking with Chloe Sevigny's character and this guy goes up to her and just says hello. And she says, how dare you address me, sir? Be gone or I shall have you whipped. And then Chloe Sevigny goes, oh, and you don't even know him. She says, oh, I know him well. I never speak to a stranger like that. But she's awful. She's really awful.
But hilarious.
Yeah.
She knows it. I think that's why it's okay, is because she totally owns it.
Oh, yeah. She knows that she's being horrendous.
Yeah.
Like, everything she does, she has this, like, little smirk on her face.
Oh, she loves it as well. Yeah. She's, like, absolutely enjoys every sentence.
And, like, all the stuff about not paying her...
her friend.
Her friend who's actually her maid.
As a friendship is involved, I'm sure the paying of wages would be offensive to both of us.
But she knows she's being outrageous in that moment.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
That's so funny.
She has so much fun as well just messing people around for no reason. Like, his character name is... bear with my thought, Reginald de Courcy. So there's a kind of potential... she sees a potential husband in him, but I don't think she doesn't really care.
No, he's just quite good-looking and
He's quite good-looking and she quite likes to flirt with him and just likes to mess... and kind of likes to annoy her sister-in-law.
Yeah.
Oh, this will annoy her if I flirt with her brother. Great. And there is this thing, this sort of classic Austen thing of, oh, a woman, oh, the whole thing is, oh, I have to find a husband, I have to gain financial security. But that is there. But I think mainly she just wants to mess people around. She doesn't really care about that much. I think she's quite happy on her own.
Yeah, I think she loves it.
She's really independent.
Very independent, yeah.
That is true. You don't get that for an Austen character, really, usually.
Extremely independent.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the only person she talks to about like, her confidant is Chloe Sevigny's character.
Mm-hmm.
But even so, they don't really work together. She mainly just tells her stuff. She doesn't really rely on her. I mean, there's a couple of times where she sort of tells her to do something to help her out, but it's mainly her own... she does everything on her own accord, which is great.
Yeah, she's really self-sufficient. Yeah. And she says something about her daughter. I mean, that's quite a funny relationship anyway. But she says something like halfway through the film about the fact that, oh, she doesn't need the company of a child. She wouldn't be that boring.
Someone, I read one review that maybe talks about like an award-winning performance from Kate Beckinsale.
Mm.
I mean, it's quite early to talk about things like that, but do you think, is that on the cards, do you think? Would you be surprised?
I'd be surprised, just because of the genre that it's in.
Yeah.
I mean, it is a really good performance, but it's normally drama takes it, doesn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. But it would be nice to have, if she got some form of recognition. I think she is the main pull of the good reviews.
Yes, definitely. She really steals the show. I mean, the novella was called Lady Susan. It is her story and her kind of web of deceit that we're into.
Absolutely.
Well, I would say, apart from Tom Bennett, I think he's the...
But he's not in it enough. That's right.
No, but that's for me. he still steals it.
Every scene he's in, he's the best. Well, let's talk about him. So Tom Bennett plays Sir James Martin, who you see him at the beginning where he's been rejected by Susan's daughter, Frederica. And then he comes back into it. He just turns up at the house that sort of almost escapes to. Funniest character of the year so far, I think. There's a scene involving peas, which is hilarious. I also love it that he's kind of confused by the word Churchill. I had church and I had hill. I just didn't put the two together. Great. And on his, like, there's a title card for each character. Is it a bit of a rattle he's described as?
Yeah.
Yeah, and he's an absolute idiot, but... a great idiot.
Totally lovable idiot.
Yeah. And I love that he said, wow, that's so impressive that this guy writes verse and poetry. Blissful ignorance.
So many good lines.
Yeah. He's so happy as well. He really thinks everything he does works and that he's wooing Frederica with his knowledge of the difference between verse and poetry.
Yeah, he's kind of a kinder version of the like vicar cousin that they try and marry Elizabeth off to in Pride and Prejudice. He seems like a similar character, you know, they're trying to marry him off to someone who doesn't want to marry him, but instead of that guy, Mr. Collins, he's called, he's like awful, horrendous, whereas this guy's just a lovable fool and it's so much more fun.
Yeah, I think he's also one of the reasons this film has been as successful as it is critically. Yeah. He's so funny.
But also the editing of him has been great because they don't overuse him.
No.
He's hilarious, but this is the type of character that could be used in like a sitcom or something and they kill him after half an hour. You're bored of him and they've got six more episodes And I think this is actually showing how difficult it is to make really good comedy because you've got an amazing character there. But you can't use him too much. And, like, that's such a well-written... His lines are fantastic. Mm-hmm. But he has to have a small part for his comedy to work.
Yeah.
And everyone says, like, comedy is about editing. And this film has got its editing down to a T. It's perfect.
Restraint,
it's so
I think,
good.
Is the key as well. Like,
exactly the right word.
He's absolutely... everything, but not just the character, but even Lady Susan's vicious lines, there's sort of restraint to them. She can't, everything she says can't be that. There's sort of everyone, every single character has like this kind of a restraint to them, like just few and far between.
Period,
that's more
as well,
effective.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
It's the like this kind of hyper articulate and like the importance of the manners and that everything has to seem like it's really pleasant and polite, but underneath it's cutting and barbed and it's great.
Things as well, like Lady Susan's brother-in-law, he sort of says a loose quote and then a couple of times he goes, oh, I can find the citation if you like.
Yeah.
That happens like that two or three times. But yeah, just that kind of restraint. Just do it a couple of times just so it gets the comedic effect.
The trouble is, you said that a lot of... I hadn't seen the trailer, but you were saying a lot of it's in the trailer.
The slight problem is that I saw the trailer before I watched it. So, and a lot of the best... Some of the best lines are in the trailer.
It's just gutting. Why do people do that?
It's a bit of a shame. But I mean, it is still funny watching it again. I mean, it is genuinely really funny and seeing it in the context makes it even funnier.
Yeah, definitely. I don't feel like you'd already like heard it or whatever. It was it was great to like pick it up again. I was looking forward to the lines.
Yeah, exactly. And when they deliver, they are still great. Yeah.
But people listening, just use this, our chat,
if you
as your
seen
trailer.
The trailer, maybe don't
watch it. Go and see it.
Sure, yeah. So we've also got another major character is Susan's daughter, Frederica, played by Morfydd Clark, and she's described by her mother as a simpleton. she's so oppressed by her monster of a mother. You do feel really sorry for her because she's actually really quite intelligent.
Yeah,
quite
she
lovely.
Is.
Yeah.
They have a really funny little relationship, the two of them. And I mean, obviously... Lady Susan is using everyone she meets as a pawn in her kind of master plan, and her daughter kind of suffers this the most. But I think that she's got her head screwed on.
Yeah.
And she knows what she's doing. She's playing her own game.
Definitely. Also playing their own game, as we mentioned, Chloe Sevigny, who's married to Stephen Fry.
Yes.
Who is restrained very much. I think there's only like one or two scenes.
Yeah, he could have not been in it for me, to be honest.
Oh, really?
That broke it for me, because I was like, and there's Stephen Fry.
Oh, because you recognised him.
Well, not so, but just he was being Stephen Fry.
I think she's a lot more passive than Susan, because she has married this guy that she hates, and he is slightly controlling of her. Like, yes. He says to her, if you spend any more time with Susan, you're going to be we're shipping off to back to Connecticut.
Oh yeah, and then Lady Susan has some very funny lines that ends
you'll be
with,
scalped.
Yeah, and ends with her being like, let's hope his next bout of gout is
the last one. Yeah. She's still quite manipulative and cunning herself in her own way, which is great. Another strong female character.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm not sure she's American in the book.
Oh, I don't know.
I think that's added for this.
Did she not do the accent?
Maybe not. I also think Whit Stillman loves Chloe Sevigny. And I think he quite likes the idea of the threat of moving back to America. And it makes it kind of funnier.
You know, Xavier Samuel, who plays De Courcy, he's an Australian actor.
Very
good English accent.
Okay, so we mentioned there that a lot of the female characters are very strong-willed and all playing their own games. So what did you think of the film's gender politics? How did women come across? How did men come across? What did you think overall?
I think there were a lot of strong female characters. Austin's very good at that. Yeah. And I just love that she's not very likeable, Lady Susan. I think that's great. I think she does often paint men as a bit of bumbling idiots, really, doesn't she?
Big time.
And I think, was there a likeable male character? Like, I mean, I know that we liked them, but like...
Yeah, well, I mean, I was thinking this, that in terms of women, all of the women, in fact, I think in the film, apart from Mannering's wife, come off quite well.
Yes.
Even her sister-in-law, the mother, who also is Mrs. De Courcy, she comes off very well, that she seems to be the matriarch of this family. Where the men, on the other hand, so you've got James Martin, who's an absolute idiot.
Yeah.
Stephen Fry's character as well, he comes with just a slightly, you know, they mock him because he's got sort of gout and he's older and he's a bit bumbling. Even De Courcy, I think he comes across as quite intelligent sometimes, but he is very easily manipulated by Susan. And he fools her because of her good looks.
Yeah, she calls him calf-like, doesn't she?
Yeah. But even someone like Mannering himself, who is Lady Susan's lover, he has no lines at all.
Yeah. Mm.
He's got no agency.
What's his title card say?
A divinely handsome man. That's all he is in the film. He is completely used for his looks. Which is nice to see.
It's weird, isn't it? Because if that was like, you know, a female character, we'd all be like, that's ridiculous.
Oh, how dare they do this?
But I suppose the funny thing is that it's completely taking the mick out of that.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure in the book, that's all he is as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think that's kind of a Whit Stillman kind of stylistic thing, giving this character who's considered relatively important, just give him no lines, because that's all he represents to one, the lead character. So, having said that, can we call the film is it a feminist film, do you think? Because on the one hand, they are all obsessed with marriage, the women, and social status, and having a male, you know, financial provider. But it is for their own gain. It's not because they're all like, oh, I need to find my love, that kind of thing. It's just something I need, and I'm going to get it because I can. I'm going to use my femininity against the men.
Yeah, I mean, I think time period, you can't escape that. You can't escape that marriage is key. And yes, it's interesting. And Lady Susan never really talks about love, does she?
No.
It's about what it can do for her.
Lady Susan's capable of it.
No, I don't think that's in her ballpark.
No.
But I don't know. What would you say, Helen? Do you think it's a feminist film?
I didn't even see it in those terms.
No.
It was just funny.
Yeah.
And it wasn't offensive. And it was funny.
Okay, so you don't really see it as having much of a sort of political message.
No,
really.
I think that's taking it too seriously.
Okay.
But for me.
Yeah.
Does it pass the Bechdel
test? Bechdel test. I believe it would. So that's with...
Two female characters talking about
something other than men.
Yeah.
Did they?
I don't know if they do. They talk about the men a lot, but...
Yeah.
They do. I'm sure they do.
I think the Bechdel test doesn't make that much sense.
Yeah.
I think it's a cool kind of thing.
It's a cool
to
thing
say,
to point out because a lot of
this many films fail it.
Yeah, but I don't think it's the be all end all of a film being
good or worthwhile or
offensive
feminist
to women. Yeah.
Yeah,
like there are many. I'm sure there are many films that can be considered feminist that failed the Bechdel test.
Yeah, I'm sure there are.
Okay, so We mentioned before that previous adaptations of Jane Austen's works are considered very good films, but quite straightforward.
Mm-hmm.
And in many ways this is, but I just think there's a couple of little edges that Stillman throws in, like the title cards.
Mm.
So at the beginning, every time a new character is introduced, you've got the character's name and just the sort of how they connect with the other characters, and also sometimes description, like we mentioned earlier. Mm-hmm. Mannering is just a divinely handsome man.
Mm-hmm.
And then Sir James Martin, he's like Frederica Vernon's suitor, a bit of a rattle.
Yeah.
And I think, for me, that on one hand is giving audience relevant information, like context, but also I think it's some sort of a little bit of mockery of Austen's novels, that A, they are, the relationship between characters is very complex, like,
mm-hmm.
you know, sister-in-law, brother-in-law, mm-hmm. half-brother, mm-hmm. etc. It's just, even when I was, both of the ones I've read have been like, okay, just slow down, who is this guy,
why
is
he important? You almost want like an
important?
Index.
Yeah, you want a family tree that you can pull out and look at every now and then. And this film, I think, is mocking how, you know, how complex that can be. And also the line, like, a divinely handsome man. It's mocking that, absolutely, I think. Would you say then that this is a Austen adaptation, like straightforward from the book? This is how the book is. This is a film version of that book. Or do you think it's slightly postmodern? Slightly.
Yeah, I think I would go with that.
Well, not quite parody, but
I kind
slightly
of,
pastiche.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I think it is. And because I don't like those kind of films, I really relish in all the little bits. Like when loads of them just run off.
Yeah.
Like the girls pick up their skirts and run
away,
and wail.
Yeah. And I personally find those period dramas, I find it really hard to get into because I think I want this story without all the costume, and it just tell me the story, and I find all the costume and the language gets in the way.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
And it was all the costume and the language that was adding all the laughs in this bit, and it was saying how silly it does look.
Yeah.
It also with the title cards, it was kind of that kind of offbeat humour of, like, what we do in the shadows.
Yeah, I don't know if definitely you've got that at all. Yeah,
yeah, which I really like that film.
That
really
film,
makes me laugh. So
I think that Stillman has, like, a kind of luxury in the fact that this isn't a well-known Austen film, that you can do that.
Sure.
I feel like people wouldn't take Pride and Prejudice
exactly. And he did this to it, I think.
People aren't going to like it because it's so treasured, it's so loved.
Partly, but also I just think maybe Pride and Prejudice isn't very funny.
Yeah.
As well.
Yeah.
In all honesty. And that's where the film, I think, as well as kind of being postmodern, it probably is quite serious. Because I'm sure the book does have this kind of humour to it.
Mm-hmm.
That the lead character is so vicious. And there's humour in that.
Yeah. It's kind of giving Jane Austen kind of benefit of the doubt, if you get what I mean.
Yeah.
In terms of
being like...
Yeah, this is probably... Maybe we're all taking this too seriously.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Maybe there is an edge of humour that we haven't found in her other books.
Well, there's definitely, like, a worry, isn't it, that you idolise someone like Austen or Dickens or Shakespeare, and you, like, can't touch it. It has to be preserved
exactly how it is.
And so it is really fun.
Sure.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads, generally, for most people, are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
So we're going to have, just we got from Twitter, @RealFilmFatale. She says the film was endearing and cleverly funny. Kate is a force to be reckoned with. Absolutely agree there.
Yeah,
again,
100%.
Kate Beckinsale is probably the main draw of the film. We've also got @JSlaterWilliams. He sent us a capsule review from theskinny.co.uk. I've just got a quote from that where he says, "A constant scene stealer is Tom Bennett as a dulcish suitor who is slow to catch on to basically anything. He provides some of the most riotous scenes in any recent film."
Yeah,
again,
totally agree.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's worth seeing just for him.
Sure, definitely, yeah. Okay, so before we get into talk about the end of the film, any final thoughts?
Great film, guys.
Yeah.
Great film.
Absolutely. It is a really great film. Really quite lighthearted, considering she's so horrible. It is quite lighthearted. And it's very easy to watch.
It's such good fun. And I honestly think it's a film you could watch with anyone. You don't have to be an Austin fan. You guys aren't. You absolutely loved it.
We've got two out of the three of us. Two of us don't like Austin. One of us does. And all three of us agree that the film's great.
Yeah. So, yeah, I think it's a film you can watch with anyone, any age group. It's just a real laugh.
Yeah, sure. Okay. Definitely go and see it. It's out on Friday.
Yeah.
Okay, so now that you've seen the film and you're back with us, the ending, well, I thought was quite a surprising ending. So Frederica marries De Courcy, but then Susan marries James Martin, which was crazy.
Was not expecting
that.
No,
I did not expect that at all.
I love the scene when they all get together and try and hypothesise as to why she would have done that. It makes no sense. Yeah. And what are the three options they come up with? They come up with that, A, there's actually something likeable about this man that she's found out.
Yeah.
B, that he's got more money than he let on, or something like that. I can't remember the third one.
I can't remember the third one either, but everyone's very puzzled.
That's really good as well.
It's very good.
It kind of takes the mick out of those really key speeches.
Yeah, isn't one of them that she genuinely loved with him?
That's the third one is like, or maybe she just loves him. Yeah.
That character says well, yeah, they say one cannot control the heart. That kind of thing. Yeah, Susan can, and she.
But what did you think? Why did you think she'd done it before?
I was confused because I was very surprised. I was so surprised. I was like, "What? Why is this?"
But I think he must be rich, like secretly.
I think he's secretly rich.
Yeah,
and I kind of think now that she's done it and got a husband, and I think A, he's rich, and B, he's an idiot.
Yeah,
and because she is having this affair with Mannering, and is. Been impregnated.
Yeah, well, that's a big reveal.
Yeah, she's been pregnant from Mannering, who is married, so that would be a scandal. So not only does she now have a husband that she can sort of lump that onto, she's also got an idiot husband so that she can do what she wants with
it's
Mannering.
Exactly.
And he's not going to question anything because he's so stupid.
I mean, he's so stupid he believes she gets pregnant on her wedding night. The next day when she tells him.
When she wakes up in the morning, she says, I'm pregnant.
Oh, bless him.
A lot of films where you have this kind of an anti-hero, there's morality involved, and they get their comeuppance in some way. I feel like she doesn't at all, because she's done what she set out to do from the beginning. Frederica's married off to a wealthy family.
Mm-hmm.
She's married off to a wealthy husband. She's happy, and she can still have her affairs and everything. She's won.
Yeah, she's won everything.
She's played everyone. I mean, she isn't quite... Maybe it's not quite ideal, but she's still...
I wondered if she was kind of...
Or maybe it's all along it's been... This has been her ploy.
Because I wonder if she was doing this with De Courcy.
I thought maybe
like,
to...
throw off the scent that she wants to marry her daughter off to
and embrace her daughter. Well, maybe I want to marry the one you like. That kind of attitude.
Like, because obviously him marrying Lady Susan would be so much worse for his family than her daughter. So she's lesser of two evils.
Definitely. Yeah, I wish. I really want it to be true that this was her plan all along.
Absolute mastermind.
Yeah, but she wins. The villain wins.
She totally wins.
Yeah, and that's great to see. I think maybe in the book, from what I've read, the book, there's slightly more... She gets slightly more of a comeuppance in a way. I think it plays very slightly similar, but I think there's a little bit more of De Courcy and Frederick like, oh, well, we won't let her win, we'll get married instead, that kind of thing. Whereas in the film, I think he still... sticks up for her, doesn't he? Even when they're not together anymore.
Yeah.
He still says, oh, she's still a wonderful woman. I'm sure there's some sort of line like that.
Yeah. She's definitely painted... Like, people don't look again. Like, people like her at the end.
Sure, yeah. But yeah, that's quite an interesting way to go, I thought. And very atypical of Austin. So where the lead doesn't end up with...
With who she should do.
Also, I really enjoyed how she kept saying... He's no Solomon.
He's no Solomon. Oh, you know the story of King Solomon? Yeah.
And then it kind of went through Chinese whispers so that people picked it up. And then they obviously didn't understand what she was saying, but they were like, that's clearly a phrase that people use these days.
Yeah, so I can find you the citation.
Yeah, it went through the things. Really made me laugh.
Yeah, great ending to a great film. If we wrap up there...
I think it's one of those films there's not a lot to spoil, really.
No.
Because, I mean, the ending is the spoiler, but... I don't think you see that coming. That's
not
a real plot twist.
Quite a plot twist. And you don't see it happen. You hear about it from another character, suddenly, oh, she's going to marry him. Like,
and that's that Austin thing of, like, everything's heard from news. Yeah.
Yeah. It's all gossip. Like, yeah, scam, yeah, so I see this, I think you'll agree that you can see and appreciate this film whether you love or hate Jane Austen.
Yeah, or if you've got any background in it or not.
Yeah, sure.
Or you just want to see something really funny, go and see it.
Yeah, it's 90 really minutes funny. Of just pure fun.
Yeah, nice and short as well. Yeah. Good length.
Good length.
So that's it for the show. Thank you very much for listening. If you enjoyed it, please give us a review on iTunes. And if you've got any questions or comments for next week's show, tweet us at Curzon Cinemas with the hashtag Curzon Podcast. So that's goodbye from me, goodbye from Jenna.
Goodbye.
And goodbye from Helen.
Goodbye.
So we're going to end the show now with an interview with the director of Love and Friendship, Whit Stillman. So enjoy that and thank you very much for listening.
So we are delighted to be joined on the Curzon Cinemas podcast by Whit Stillman, director of Love and Friendship. How are you doing today, Whit?
Thanks for having me.
And so, Love and Friendship, a new Jane Austen adaptation. As an American approaching what is a English institution almost in Jane Austen, so any struggles that you had to come over to get to the script?
Well, I had to have people who would make sure we were doing it right, so I had to vet it at many different stages, and we auditioned it for a long time, so it was sort of out there being studied, and when things were not quite right, we were hearing about it. But then we went particularly sort of with different fine-tooth combs through it to try to make it, not just from the American versus British point of view, but the period point of view. So we're trying to only have the sort of tolerable anachronisms that we needed rather than anything inadvertent and bad. I mean, we have this thing now of sound replacement. I mean, I guess we've always had it, but now it's digital and it's can be done really well. So there's a lot of debating about pronunciation of certain names. And, you know, after we corrected it, then other people come along and say, no, it was the other way. So it's very hard to know. It's not unanimous, the pronunciation of everything.
And the time period from when the original book, Lady Susan, was set, and the film has changed as well. So if you could reference the Austen text, but then you might actually have to, did you have to change anything because you were slightly adjusting the time period as well?
Well, to get back to your actually earlier question, the whole American heritage angle, Jane Austen was born in 1775, and this is written, we believe, in the 1790s. So in 1775, we were the same country. And in my view, British practices and pronunciations have become sort of more eccentric and more localized. And some things, sort of more objectively 18th century, continue in the hinterlands and abroad. And so I'm not sure if we're farther away from Jane Austen than people in present-day England. So I defend the American access to the heritage of Jane Austen. Now, your second question was?
About just changing the time period.
Well, we didn't change the time period. We're using the time period that we believe she wrote the main draft of the book. So we think the main draft of the book was completed by 1794, 1795, and that was the period we were aiming for. I believe that she also kept working on it through the early 1800s, because the final version that's in the collection of the Morgan Library in New York, see there, it's part of our heritage, is with watermark paper from 1805. So she copied it over in this very fine form, and I think Jane Austen copying over is not just a secretary transcribing every word. She'd be correcting it and changing it, modifying it, dropping things that she didn't like.
And was there any kind of idiomatic language that you had to get your head around at all?
Well, what I find really wonderful about the source material, which is published by her nephew under the title Lady Susan, what I find wonderful about that is we understand all the words, but the way she uses them is different than the way we'd use them today. So it has this sort of delightful charm of word usage. So rather than saying that someone is alive, they say they're still in life. And rather than they said something jokingly, they said, I said it in joke. And there are all these formulations that I really found charming, but we can understand them.
Yeah. And so looking back to your previous films, Metropolitan has the idea of a costume picture, but set in the past, and Love and Friendship is set in the past, but feels current to now as well. How did you approach modernizing elements of the text?
Well, I didn't want to modernize anything. I think actually the latter part of the 18th century is very close to where we are now. The very good literature, the very classic literature of then holds up really well. And I think it's now that doesn't hold up so well. So I don't like the idea that the present is going to educate the past. I like the idea that we're going to be educated by the past ourselves.
Although your main focus is Lady Susan, there's a lot of families.
No, I think that, and one reason for the title change from her nephew's title to our title, Love and Friendship is a title that Jane Austen had used for a lesser short story, but it was the title she thought of, even if it weren't for this work. And Love and Friendship allows more characters, it allows a wider field, and I think that it is broader in terms of the panorama of characters, the film, than the original novella.
Okay, and so with the different families and titles in the film, it could end up being a bit like Game of Thrones with all these people with different plans and different titles. How do you keep track of all the characters? Because there's a realm of characters in there.
I don't think anything could be less similar to Game of Thrones, to be honest. No, I think it's actually very easy to keep track of these characters. They're not that many. They're essentially defined by two or three country houses, and you know, I think we're pretty careful to keep everything pretty clear, so I don't think there's any challenging in that regard.
Okay. There's
one thing to clarify, which is that we have this device of portraits of the characters with little short description of them, and we make it very quick. We don't see them for long. We don't really see them for long enough to properly read and comprehend everything, and that is sort of a device to sort of set the tone of the movie. People are not going to be tested on the material. It's not a pass-fail course or a graded course. They just can allow that to go by without feeling obliged to remember anything. So I think some people in our initial screening said, "Oh, I couldn't follow everything that was said in that thing," as if they're worried that they had missed something. And they're not missing anything. It's intended to be that way.
Okay. And I think that that brings me into the editing of the film, because it's a tight 90 minutes and it keeps moving along very quickly, never indulging even with the amount of comic talent that you've got available. Was there a lot of funny stuff on the set that you had to make the cut, or did you find you had to be really strict with yourself about what got in and what didn't?
Well, I was trying to be really strict while we were shooting, just before we were shooting, and throwing things out that didn't seem necessary, seemed a little tedious or repetitive. So I kept cutting scenes and sort of the training from past scenes that were massively too long. And then we were adding at the same time these sort of funny scenes with these great comic performers like Tom Bennett and Justin Edwards and Jen Murray. And so I was a little worried that we were adding so much that we might be bulking up the film. But it turns out, when you're editing it, you know, you throw out a few scenes you don't think work or aren't interesting or necessary. And then I was wondering, is this film going to be long enough? Because I remember modifying the contract with the sales company that was selling the international rights. They had that the film had to be between 90 and 120 minutes. And I started thinking, well, let's change that to 85 minutes, because I'm not sure how I'm going to cut this down. And now it's 90 minutes, so it's fine. But there's a moment there, and I was thinking, oh my gosh, if I keep cutting like this, it's going to be below 85 minutes.
It's rare to hear of directors being so happy to cut this.
No, I've really decided now that I really like short, tight schedules and shorter films. I think it's particularly if it's comic, you don't want it to go on too long. It's a bit of energy, laughing up a storm.
And you apply that on set, keeping an immaculate schedule.
Yes, it's really helpful. I mean, they explain it to you when you're coming in and you think, oh, this is terrible. You know, the shooting day is going to start at 8 o'clock no matter how late we really want to be shooting, and it's going to end at 7 no matter what. And it seems like a terrible constraint, but it turned out to be a godsend, because we could keep our wits about us, we could get some sleep, and it allowed me to have sort of time to get up at 4 a.m. and write the scenes for Tom Bennett and other actors.
Okay. So you've mentioned Tom Bennett. Anyone that I've spoken to, he's one of their stand-up performances from the film.
Yeah.
Comic creation.
And of course, you know, we have to give credit where it's due, which is Kate Beckinsale carries the film and it's absolutely marvelous and looks terrific. And also Chloe, I don't think people fully appreciate what a great job she's doing, because So many of these scenes, Kate is the live wire with all the dialogue, and Chloe is her friend who's sort of reacting and responding, and she's just so funny. Like, there's this carriage ride towards the end where they're so hard-hearted and funny about their marriages and prospects, and Chloe's really great at that. I mean, Chloe can do more with her eyes. It's the most amazing thing. She's so expressive. I say that she's like the ocean. My favorite actor in the world is the ocean, because it is constantly moving. It's constantly doing its own thing. It's always interesting to watch, and it doesn't need any direction, nor will it take any direction. And Chloe will take direction, but she's sort of like that. She sort of exists in space doing her thing, and it's a huge relief for the director. You know, just let Chloe operate, let her do her thing.
And I've read that she initially had rehearsed an English accent and prepared that for the film.
Oh, which she talked about that, yeah.
And which was then changed at the last minute.
Well, the problem there was I'd had the funny experience of seeing how much people enjoyed the sort of commentary, the transatlantic humor, you know, Europe and America making fun of each other or whatever. And I remember how well that worked with Barcelona. And then I'd been immersed in the literature of our War of Independence and the political times before it and after it, and the exile of the Tories who had lost that war. They're returning to London. There's a wonderful painting by Benjamin West, Britannia Welcomes the Return of the Loyalists. And it's just so over-the-top emotional and patriotic. And so Benjamin West was one of the Tory exiles, the great artist. And so the idea of Chloe playing Connecticut in a Jane Austen film was too attractive. And it really works with the character, because Mr. Johnson, played by Stephen Fry, In the original novel, he's threatening to settle in a country village if she keeps seeing Lady Susan. And she says she couldn't bear the idea of settling in a country village, so she has to break off with Lady Susan. But in this case, it's even more terrifying. She is threatened with being sent back to Hartford, Connecticut. And that's much worse fate. And so I had no idea that Connecticut itself would be such a punchline, such an effective punchline. So that works. So Chloe's a little disappointed not to get to use her great English accent, but I just hate it the way sort of spectator, there's certain nasty-minded spectator who, no matter how perfectly someone does something, if they know their national origin is different, they're always going to be finding fault with it. So I wanted to avoid that also. We had that experience with Damsels in Distress, because we had an actress who had a consciously phony British accent, and so many comments, you know, upset about that. And then people saying, well, it's revealed at the end that it's a phony accent. People say, well, I don't care that it's revealed at the end it's just a phony accent.
And the you yourself, you've expanded on Austen's original Lady Susan novella.
You'll notice I've done this entire interview with my English accent. I hope you appreciate how perfect it is.
It's
excellent.
The yes. Kent songbird?
Yes, it's Kentish perfection. Or is it more Surrey? I'm not sure.
And so you've written the adaptation or novelization of the books. How did you work on expanding
novelization? Yeah. We don't call it a novelization. It's a novel based on the film, derived from the film. So Love and Friendship, this is a novel that's out. It's in bookstores. It's actually published by an imprint of Jane Austen's original publishers. So Two Roads, that brought it out, is an imprint of the John Murray Press. And it's John Murray who published Emma and her last novels. And it's called Love and Friendship, in which Jane Austen's Lady Susan Vernon is entirely vindicated. And the good thing about this, certain editors are going to hate to hear this, but certain times it's really good to miss your deadlines. And I blew through all my deadlines for this novel. I was supposed to finish it before the film shoot, which is, of course, impossible. And so I didn't start it until we had picture lock. And I'm very thankful that I waited, because I discovered the whole strain of Martin humor that Tom Bennett sort of helped us develop. And so the novel is narrated by Sir James Martin's nephew. And he is not quite as dim as Sir James, but far more pretentious. So the combination of dim and pretentious I always find just delightful. And it's also a little bit of a send-up of the memoir of my aunt by Jane Austen's nephew. So these two sort of strains helped focus the novel. So we have the sort of Lady Susan story, as in the film, except her nephew is turning everything around, so Lady Susan is actually in the right, and the De Courcys and Jane Austen are in the wrong. And, I mean, I'm usually a really slow writer, and it was kind of a miracle. I had to trick the publisher many times to get more time to finish it, but then they tricked me, because at a certain point, I was asking when books would be ready, thinking that it'd be about a month away, and then I had another chance to correct proofs or something like that. And they said, oh, we'll have books next week, which means the final corrections weren't in it. So if you want to buy this edition now, it'll be a collector's item, because they're going back for a second printing, and the corrections won't get in the second printing, but if there's a third printing, they will be corrected.
Well, that's Love and Friendship, the novel.
The novel.
Not the novelization.
Not the novelization. And, heaven forfend.
And Love and Friendship, the film, is out in cinemas now. Whit Stillman, thanks a lot for joining us.
Thanks very much.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.